Welcome to Kidney Talk, a program of Renal Support Network, a show that streams health, happiness, and hope to the kidney community. You can download all Kidney Talk shows from iTunes and find a variety of resources to help you navigate this illness at rsnhope.org. Please welcome your host, Lori Hartwell, who has lived with kidney disease since the age of two.
Welcome to Kidney Talk, everyone. I am very excited today because you hear about people who grow up with kidney disease and make a difference, and it always inspires me. And, you know, I often think about, I've known one other person that had kidney disease as a child who decided to become a doctor. And today we're going to be talking to Dr. Ken Suta, who is a pediatric nephrologist at Stanford. And he's going to tell us a little bit about what it was like to grow up with kidney disease and how that helps him be more empathetic. And he's written about it, and he's my new hero. So welcome to the show, Dr. Suta.
Hi, thank you, Lori. Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us a little bit about your experience growing up.
I grew up in Florida, and then I was just doing my normal kid thing. I went to go see my doctor when I was about 10 years old. And for some reason, at that point, they checked my urine and they noticed that there was abnormal protein in my urine, an abnormal amount of protein. So they continued to follow that for a little bit and did some additional tests. And they realized that that was not a normal thing. And so they sent me to a nephrologist to get checked out. There is a pretty common thing in childhood called nephrotic syndrome. Not super common disease amongst all children, but as far as childhood kidney diseases go, it's one of the more common ones. And I didn't quite fit the full picture of nephrotic syndrome, but I've had some of the features. So they ended up doing a biopsy, which showed that I had something called FSGS, focal segmental glomerular sclerosis. It's basically a long way of saying that there was scarring of my kidney that was the result of this damage from there being protein and the filtering parts of my kidneys not holding on to the protein appropriately.
Now, I have a question for you. Could you say focal segmental, I can't say, FSGS back when you were diagnosed?
Oh, yeah, definitely not.
Okay, just for the record, everybody, it takes some medical training to say the words they create. So that's why they give so many acronyms.
Yes, absolutely. So they had tried me on some medications, basically steroids, prednisone. In most kids that have nephrotic syndrome, this abnormal protein in their urine, they respond to steroids pretty quickly, and they can actually go into remission and eventually outgrow the nephrotic syndrome. Unfortunately, that wasn't the case for me. And so they were able to slow the progression of my kidney disease, but not stop it completely. They put me on some different kinds of medication, a blood pressure medication called an ACE inhibitor, that was able to reduce the amount of protein that I was spilling in my urine, but it didn't completely return it back to normal.
Aren't steroids fun?
Yeah. Oh, right. Yes.
I mean, I don't know about you, but were you really hungry?
Yeah, I was about 10 years old when they tried out the course of steroids. I gained a ton of weight. I was retaining water. I was eating everything and gained weight from eating. I was feeling extremely energetic and moody, but then also very tired when they were starting to do the tapering of the steroids. And so I had actually had to take a couple of months off of school and was doing some homeschooling during that time.
They're a great painkiller. I remember my mother making liver and onions, which I can't even stand to even say that. And I was like, how can I steal it? How can I steal it? How can I steal her? I mean, that's how hungry I was. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you know, you can't explain that hunger unless you've experienced it. And people who haven't been on it, your brain is just wired to think about food.
Yeah.
And, you know, which, like, people think about drugs. You're not thinking about drugs. You're thinking about filling that appetite that you can't fill.
Mm-hmm.
So I just like people to know that, because a lot of times they think they don't have any self-discipline. And that comes with empathy again. Like, you can say, I've been there. It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not an easy thing to do. And you most likely will gain weight.
Absolutely, yeah. Thankfully, I didn't have to stay on the steroids for more than a couple months and then was on this other medication. That was when I was about 10 years old. And so very slowly over the course of my like teenage years, my kidney function was slowly deteriorating, but not quite to the point where my kidneys completely stopped working. But by the time I was graduating from college, things had deteriorated to the point that it was clear that at some point in the near future, I would need either dialysis or a transplant to survive.
Well, how was it going to college? I mean, now, one of the things that I always know as a youth growing up with kidney disease is that sometimes I just didn't relate to my peers because of the fact that, you know, I had to grow up really fast and had to face my own mortality more than once and see the look of my parents' face and deal with a lot of emotions most kids don't have to deal with at an early age. So I always had sometimes a hard time relating to them because I felt they were silly. And I'm like, why would I want to hang out with you? So I stayed with my dog and, you know, I did arts and crafts and was more of a loner, you know, like that's what I enjoyed instead of, you know, what they wanted to do.
Absolutely. It was difficult to understand at times, like why I was having to go through all these doctor appointments and blood tests and all these dietary modifications that I had to do when all of my peers weren't having to deal with any of those things, thinking about taking schedule for taking medications. And even if just like going over to a friend's house, having to take my medications with me and all those other little things that you have to deal with in your day-to-day life. And at the same time, though, I was fortunate that while my kidney function was declining, I didn't really feel that much of an effect of it. It was going on in my body in the background, but there wasn't necessarily like a clear symptom that I could pinpoint that was related to my kidney disease, other than maybe sometimes I was feeling a little bit tired, more tired than other people. And I definitely feel like at times that made it difficult, more difficult for me to really understand why I was going through all these things. What was the purpose of the medications? And for example, if I missed a medication, I didn't see any negative consequences of that. If anything, maybe there might be some changes in my lab, but that might only be like several months later. So it can be very difficult to, as a teenager, as a young person, really being able to understand that. And I see that with many of my patients today as well.
Well, and when I was on dialysis and I just got my last transplant, you know, you start to just kind of feel like a frog in a boiling pot. You don't know how bad you feel.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and that you just adjust and you just like, oh, yeah, I feel okay. I mean, I didn't feel it. And that's what's so crazy about kidney disease is that people like, well, I feel okay compared to what? That's why it can be so crazy and silent and just sneak up on you.
Yeah.
So you're in college. When did you decide to go to medical school? And tell us a little bit about, you know, that process and what it was like.
Yeah, I always really loved biology and science. And so that was what drew me to the medical field first, just wanting to understand like how cells were working and how disease happened. I had had exposure to family members that were in medicine. My mom is a radiation oncologist and I have an aunt that's also an internist. So I had an idea about what a little bit about medicine was, but I wasn't quite sure that was right for me. But it was really my interest in the science aspect of it that really drew me in. I worked early on with somebody at the medical school at my college, working in a lab who was an MD PhD. He was trained as a physician, but did science, basic science work in a biology lab trying to understand disease. And I thought that was really, really interesting, being able to use science to come up with new ways of thinking about disease and understanding disease and eventually coming up with new treatments.
I mean, and, you know, I don't know, but I watched The Pit, so I'm an expert on medical care now. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's stressful to go to medical school.
Absolutely.
I mean, that alone, how did that impact your health?
Well, like you said before, the changes happen so slowly that you don't realize how sick you're feeling. In my first couple of years of medical school, after I graduated from college, I became used to just feeling nauseated all the time. And it was like a regular occurrence that I would, oh, I just have to go throw up one like in the afternoon sometime. And that's just something that happens to me. And it wasn't until after I got my transplant that I realized that, oh, wait, that's not actually a normal feeling to have. But like you were mentioning, just dealing with all the long hours of studying, even before I started with my patient interactions, the stress of of having to take our medical major medical exams, it definitely takes a toll on the body. I was fortunate that I got my kidney transplant from my dad in my second year of medical school before I started my patient care component of my training. But then eventually when I did start taking care of patients, yeah, there's a lot that you have to get used to in terms of accommodating your working schedule to incorporate time off to take your medications, to go to your doctor's appointments. There's a lot of juggling and moving around things to be able to make that work. And I think because for a long time, I really wanted to think of myself as like as normal as possible, that I was doing all the same things that all of my peers were doing all the different parts of the medical training that were, of course, are very important, that I didn't necessarily ask for all the help that I needed to get in terms of asking for accommodations or extra time to do things that I needed, like those doctor's appointments or rest when I needed, if I was feeling tired because of side effects from my medications.
Did your friends know that you were going through kidney disease?
By the time I got to medical school, I had started to learn to be more open about my kidney disease. Definitely when I was in high school and in college, I was a lot more quiet about it and didn't necessarily share as much about it, except with my closest friends. But when I was in medical school, I started to see more interactions of myself with other patients going through kidney disease and saw the powerful position that I had kind of being at that intersection of having experience in medicine, but also having the patient experience and being able to share my experiences as a patient with my medical colleagues, but then also my expertise in medicine with the other patients that were also going through, and being able to speak that language, the different languages between those two different groups, and serve as a bridge between those people.
You know, it's really empowering when you learn your story. It's not a burden, it's inspiring. And, you know, people just keep it back, but everybody has something. Yes. So sometimes when you start sharing, they start sharing what they have. And it can be, I mean, I just learned this over 32 years of doing this. So it's really exciting to see that growth. I wanted to come up just a little bit about, so when did you know your kidneys were just like, you know, we're tired? tell us a little bit about that process and where they're at and what you're doing now.
Yeah. The first time around, it was, again, during those first 2 years of medical school when I established care with my new nephrologist and was referred to the transplant program. That's when we really started to talk about, you know, transplants kind of right around the corner, where we want to be able to start thinking about these things proactively before you get to the stage where you're feeling so sick that you absolutely need to get the transplant. You don't have a choice. It's better to be able to approach transplant preemptively before you actually have to go on to dialysis.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. And so I think, again, I had the advantage of gaining all this new medical knowledge and as a medical student, and that I think really helped me to kind of understand things a little bit better. After my transplant, I still also had a lot of issues. My transplant surgeon before my transplant made very clear to me that transplant is a treatment and not a cure, and it comes with its own host of issues and things that you have to deal with related to the immunosuppression and medications and side effects and et cetera. And that was certainly the case for me as well. I had a lot of issues with infections, particularly EBV, Epstein-Barr virus, and CMV, cytomegalovirus.
I had CMV before there was a antiviral medication. Mm-hmm. So I was on an ice blanket for, oh my God.
Oh my gosh.
It was horrible, you know, and they didn't know how to test for it.
Yeah.
And the only way they found out was the other kid that got the other transplant came in with the same thing, because the kidney was working fine,
yeah,
but my body wasn't. And so we're so lucky to have this antiviral medication, because you usually didn't survive it. Mm-hmm. Back then, I mean, they had to remove the kidney.
Yeah,
you know, that was their idea. That was their only treatment. Mm. So we've come a long way. I like to remind people of that. You know, it's sometimes we think we haven't, but I'm like the personal guinea pig that survived, and it's amazing. I mean, I'm all for all the new treatments that are coming out.
Absolutely. Very much thanks to medical research. Sometimes we think that, you know, there's obviously still a long way to go and more things that can be improved.
Yes.
But we have absolutely come an extremely long way. The outcomes for kidney transplants and other transplants has dramatically improved over the last several decades, thanks to these advances in medications that are now the standard that we're all used to taking.
You just have to stay alive till the next miracle happens. That's what I tell people.
Yeah.
Because there were things that happened to me that they said there's no way you can ever get transplanted or overcome it, and they've since solved those problems. So I always seem to be able to stay alive long enough to benefit from when, you know, people burn the midnight oil and you know, investigate these new therapies. I wanted to ask you, so was your donor, did you know your donor? Was it a family member or a living donor? Or, you know, I've been trying to educate people that sometimes you can do designated donors, you know, too. That comes along too, but that's very rare, but it gives people hope that, you know, there's another way.
Yes. My first transplant was a living donor for my dad. He was 60 years old at the time that he donated, but was in extremely great health and was able to donate his kidney to me. And it enabled me to do so much. Like I said, graduating from medical school, I went to the transplant games. I took up swimming and won medals in that, and have been able to do all kinds of other things that I never imagined that I would have been able to do growing up with kidney disease.
And so you said your first transplant. Now, you're a practicing nephrologist at this time, because I just want to ask a question. Are you an easier patient or a harder patient based on, you know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, the more you know, sometimes the more difficult you are, which is, you know, I always say the difficult people survive. Because and you get that with empathy. Like some people say, oh, you know, they're driving me crazy with questions. I'm like, no, those are the ones who are, you know, fighting to learn everything they can. And so I think your face told me everything, but since they can't see you, maybe you could tell us.
Yes, absolutely. I think there's some instances where I'm an extremely easy patient and others where I can be more difficult because of the knowledge that I have. But in that difficulty, again, it's about self-advocacy and being on top of what's going on with my body and fighting to have a shared decision with my team about what's going on. I approach my transplant doctors and my nephrologists as they're the ones that are running my medical care. And so I do defer to them and their recommendations. I don't go in with like an idea of like, we absolutely, let's do X, Y, and Z. I have thoughts about which direction we should go and things that we might do. But I try to approach that as having a discussion with my medical team. Sometimes when thinking about my own medical care, it's difficult. I can get like a little bit too laser focused on like one thing. And so it's nice to have that outside perspective of my medical team that can kind of see the bigger picture outside of just what I might be focused on. As I mentioned, I was talking about my first transplant. With the infections that I had, there were a lot of changes that had to happen with my immunosuppression, which did eventually open the door to rejection. I did this kind of like ping pong between reducing my immunosuppression to allow me to fight off the rejection, which then put me at risk for rejection infection and then rejection.
Right. Yeah, no, it boosters your immune system. Yeah.
Yeah. So ultimately I ended up having to go on dialysis about a decade after my first transplant. And was on dialysis for about 2 years. And definitely during that time, there was a lot of
what back dialysis?
And forth. I was fortunate that I was able to do peritoneal dialysis I was able to do at home.
My choice too.
Yeah. For me, that was the right choice for me because it allowed me to continue working full time. At that time, I had already begun my training as a pediatric nephrologist. I had moved down here to California, to the Bay Area. But as we discussed, during that period, and when there was a lot of things that were changing in my medical care, that was where there was definitely a lot of shifts back and forth between me deferring to what my medical team was advising versus me having to be like, wait, actually, I don't want to take that advice. Why don't we think about doing things in a different way? So, for example, the decision about when exactly to start peritoneal dialysis, there was a period of time for sure where my kidney function had declined and I was feeling pretty sick. And I probably could have started dialysis earlier, but it was taking me a little bit of time to get to that point of accepting that I was, mm-hmm. that I needed it.
Yeah, and you just don't want to like give up.
Yes, exactly. There was a part
give
of me that
freedom.
Was... Exactly. I was approaching the 10th year anniversary of my transplant, and especially since the transplant was from my dad, there were a lot of feelings of guilt of not wanting to like, you know, give up mm-hmm. on it and trying to, I think just mentally being able to reach that 10 year mark.
There's this song, like there's so many songs that, you know, like love songs, like, you know, losing a love, and I can listen to every one of them and think about the kidney.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
the same thing. I mean, you know, it's tell me why you're leaving me. I mean, you know, it's pretty funny, but it's the same emotion. You're losing something you love.
Absolutely.
And it's hard. You feel guilty, like you did something wrong. It's just like a relationship. You know, it is.
Yeah.
I don't know if you named your kitty, but, you know, it's important. You know, I would name them and... You know, so it's important to, you know, I treat it like a family member.
Yes, definitely. And there was certainly like a mourning period that had to go through. And that impacted my decision of when I felt ready to be able to start dialysis. And I was fortunate my doctor recognized that and was able to kind of give me that space to, because I was medically safe to be able to, there wasn't an absolute indication that I had to start on X day. And so there was time to take a couple of weeks to get to that decision and reach that decision together.
So did you get your second kidney? Was it a deceased donor or a living donor?
My second kidney was from a deceased donor. And that was about 5.5 years ago. Wait, hold on. 6 years. I don't know. All the years kind of blend together now. Yes, it was about 6.5 years ago.
How long has this kidney been working and what is your creatinine?
Yes, that one was 6.5 years ago in 2019. My creatinine is solidly right at about 1. It's even better than it was with my first transplant. And I think better than even when I was first diagnosed at 10 years old.
Wow.
So I'm very fortunate the kidney has been doing really well. Again, not without its ups and downs. Obviously, since my transplant, COVID happened and there was kind of a lot of like fears and scares that happened with that and other infectious things that have kind of come along the way. But I'm fortunate that things have been very stable. And I have a great care team of nephrologists, infectious disease doctors that I see that help me to balance all these things.
Well, I have a big question to ask you. Did you ever miss a dose of medication?
Oh, yes. I have definitely missed doses of medication.
I know. Yeah. I know. It's like, I appreciate your honesty because it's like you just sometimes miss the dose. And yeah. I mean, you just get right back on track and you talk to your doctor how they want you to handle it, like it's a couple or whatever. But it's, you know, human nature and it's about keeping the levels in your bloodstream. So, you know, it's when you keep missing doses that it puts you at risk. But I mean, you know, if you miss one time, it's not going to like, you know, I'm not encouraging it, but, you know, don't sit there and think you're going to go into rejection the next morning. It's just being consistent. And, you know, I always feel guilty when I'm like, did I take it? And, you know, then I did, because now I have a system to help me remember, did I take it, you know, because it becomes so repetitive, you forget like brushing your teeth, but I'm like, your mouth tastes fresh. So you're like, oh yeah, I did. So, you know, I could actually talk to you for a long time. So I think I'm going to invite you back because I have a million questions. But before we wrap up, one of the reasons I think it's so important, and I think we should, you know, talk more about it, but you wrote an article about empathy and being a physician. And maybe you can tell the people listening, and I think it wasn't written for the patients, it was written for the professionals. And I think it was very validating because sometimes they just, you know, oh, well, deal with it, you know, and they don't look at you. And I mean, I've even been very sick and sometimes been treated like I'm just this, I don't matter. And I mean, now I bring in pictures of myself. And, you know, one time in a center, I mean, I was I was like kind of advocating for my needs, let's say. And, you know, they were doing the things that I felt that should be done, and I was going over their head. And they saw my magazine and stuff like that. They're like, oh, we didn't know you were so accomplished. And I'm like, but it doesn't matter if I'm not accomplished. But, you know, it's very frustrating that it took that for them to understand that, you know, you're in healthcare to provide care for people. And that's not just shots.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important. Like when I go see my team, I expect them to give me the highest level of care, not because I'm a physician, but because, you know, I'm their patient. And I think it's important for all of us as physicians, as healthcare providers, to recognize that all of our patients are individuals and they have this whole life and context that they exist in outside of just our limited interaction with them as in that one patient-doctor interaction. So this paper that this like perspective article I wrote, it was for this journal called Nature Reviews Nephrology. I was asked to just provide my perspective about what it was like being a physician with kidney disease and with a transplant. And I focused on a recent interaction that I had with a patient of mine who was similar to what I was discussing before, was struggling with the decision to start dialysis. And their kidney function had been declining over time, and they had wanted to continue to pursue other avenues just to make sure that this was the absolute like end of the line, that it was that dialysis was the only choice. And it's easy for us as physicians and healthcare providers to kind of have an idea going into that interaction, be like, we know that you need to start dialysis and you need to start it like now. But it was important in that interaction to remind myself about what it was like when I was in this patient's shoes, when it was difficult for me to make that decision as well. Even despite all the knowledge that I had at the time, I wasn't ready. And it wasn't, even though I knew that I was going to need dialysis, it wasn't an immediate decision to be like, to be ready, to be able to accept that. And I think being able to provide our patients with that same level of grace, understanding that, like you were saying, that we're all human, that, you know, maybe sometimes we'll miss doses. Sometimes it takes us time to come to terms with what's going on with our medical situation. If we're afforded that luxury of having some flexibility to be able to allow some leeway in the decision-making process, we should allow our patients as much of that leeway as possible. Yeah, and so that's essentially what the article is about.
You know, because I think what you're saying too is, I don't know about you, but what I need the most from my healthcare team is to trust them. And the more I trust them, the more I can accept things.
Right.
And I, you know, and I think you must have such a incredible, you know, rapport with your patients, with, you know, and you I'm sure you give them so much hope because of the fact that a lot of times they don't think they're going to have a future with the illness. And that's why they need to be reminded by us that they do. You know, there's life with kidney disease, after transplant, you know. And because, I mean, I've been in those moments that I can't see tomorrow. And I don't want to see tomorrow. I'm like, I'm done, you know. And so it's so wonderful that you're sharing your story. And I always say adversity introduces you to yourself. But it's, you know, you probably impact every single physician in this world. I'll just say, let's just do California. And, you know, should hear you speak because I was at a meeting speaking about 2 weeks ago. And I was talking about, you know, patient experience of treatment and, you know, how patients don't feel good after a treatment. They're tired and, you know, and then afterwards he came up and asked me a question after he heard me speak, you know, because they don't have hope. And he says, why are patients apathetic? And I'm like, well, you know, because they don't feel much hope or they feel depressed or they don't feel good. And I said, and they have anxiety. And he said, oh, I never thought about anxiety. And mm-hmm. I'm like, it just surprises me. I mean, anxiety is probably the top one on the list that causes a lot of the other problems. So when you trust somebody, it's amazing that you're able to kind of just let go a little bit because somebody else is in charge that you feel will do, you know, what you is needed. And I have to say, it's been a real pleasure. And talk about, what's the name of your article? We're going to put it in the link of the podcast. We'll put a link to it, or if you want to summarize, you don't have to come up with the whole name because it's like the name of the illness. But I think it's important for people to share. I think you might have to have a subscription to get it. But we would love, you know, people to know and, you know, share this with your doctor, everybody. I mean, share it with your nurse. I mean, it's a health care, and care is caring for your patients, not just prescribing medication and helping them see that they have a future. You know, if they take care and do what, you know, it's a medical practice too, and they're practicing on us. So what's the name of the article?
The article is called Lived Experience and Empathy, Lessons Learned as a Nephrologist with Kidney Disease. And it's in this journal called Nature Reviews Nephrology. I think they told me that after about 6 months, it'll be open. It's just during the initial kind of publishing period, it's closed access to the subscribers. But then after some period of time, it will be made available to others.
You know, it's important. I think empathy, you can look up in the dictionary too, and maybe practice it before you can get the article. No, it's certainly incredible. And any closing words that you would like to tell a fellow patient?
Yes, I think there's certainly always going to be ups and downs, but I think there are things to be learned from both. Sometimes people will ask me like how I feel about my kidney disease, what would happen if I never had the kidney disease. And although I wouldn't necessarily say that I would choose to have gone through all of the struggles and things that I've been through, I think that the things that I've learned about myself and about the strength that I have from facing those struggles has made me a better person and has shown me what I'm really capable of. And so I think there's still things to be learned from both the good and the bad, the things that we have to go through.
Well, it's been a delight. We're going to invite you back because I want to hear part two of the Ken Sousa story. Have a wonderful day, and it's been a real pleasure.
Great. Absolutely. Thank you again so much for having me. I can't wait to be back again.
Thanks for listening to Kidney Talk, a program of Renal Support Network. Please make sure to find us on Facebook or sign up for our newsletter at rsnhope.org. Kidney Talk is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment from your physician. Always seek the advice of your own healthcare provider regarding your medical condition.